When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can seem intense. Like breakup R&B intense.
I thought you said you loved the sweater that I got you. If you didn't, you could have told me.
Geico makes it easy. Just go to Geico.com anytime to update or check your policy without all the extra drama.
I even had a gift receipt.
Build a better bathroom today with help from Lowe's, where you'll find great deals on everything you need during the Kohler Dream Bathroom event. So hurry into your neighborhood store to get 10 to 15% off select Kohler and Sterling bath products that are sure to transform any bathroom. Don't miss out on all of the great savings happening right now at Lowe's. Selection varies by store. Valid February 11th through March 13th, U.S. only.
You are now tuned in to the Bleed Blue Show. Here are your hosts, Steve Blair and Chris Miles.
Hello. And another edition of the Bleed Blue Show. Steve and Chris, the Bleed Blue Show, BleedBlueShow.com, Facebook fan page, the Bleed Blue Show, Twitter, Instagram, Google Plus, at the Bleed Blue Show. And we are joined by the crew, the family, the Big Blue, the infamous Sons of Jim and Gentlemen. What's going on?
Yes,
how you doing?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Woo, woo.
Yeah.
What's going on,
what's
gentlemen?
Up, Steve? What's up, Chris? Thanks for having us on, man.
Time, brother. Love, fellas. Time. Hey, Christopher, we got the guys, the infamous Sons of G-Man. Let's just right get into it. We're just going to have some sports bar talk. All the audio archives, including Bleed Blue Show, Sons of G-Man, you can find that on iTunes, Podcast Republic. Tune in the download to your smartphone devices or on BleedBlueShow.com/podcast. Man, you know, guys, man, let's the opening question I have for you guys. How are you surviving this season with all the stuff going on with the Giants, up and downs, inconsistencies? I mean, I have to get that off my chest first. LV, matter of fact, before we even get into all that, LV and Santiago, yo, let us know. Tell us about the Sons of G-Man and how we can find all your content and everything.
All right, well, Sons of G-Men is pretty much a G fan, a giant fan club that we started up. And we're getting pretty nice out there. Everybody's getting to know us. We've had the honor to meet so many players. One of our good friends is the license plate guy. He shows a lot of love.
Yeah.
And we're just about, the giant family reaching to giant family and making the family a lot tighter.
It's the brotherhood. It's the brotherhood for that G-Fan that's always been out there, you know. We're just another factor, another section about it.
That's fantastic. And so get this right. Let me ask the obvious question. You guys are lifetime G-Men, meaning from birth, okay?
Yes.
Am I right? So let me ask this. When was your first game, individually or as kids or whatever? When was the first time you ever attended a Giants?
Attended a game?
I mean, I say that one because I know it off the top. A real official game, probably when I got back here to Jersey and started getting reunited with my brothers over here, my brothers, best friend LVO, everybody, the original crew that was starting it and everything. Mm-hmm. And shout out, rest in peace, to my cousin Big Jew, Julian. He's the one that pretty much got me into it, diehard. After that, we were watching, and then we started that whole little tradition, every home open, and we started going into the game. Sooner or later, it turns into what it is now, thank God.
A labor of love.
So I'm going to say he's going back maybe 9-10 years ago. It's his first official game.
Oh,
I'm
going to
go, I think I was about 15, old stadium, which I kind of think is a little louder than the new stadium. What do you think?
I do believe that.
Of course. I've had that thought. Like, it seems like this new stadium doesn't have the sound the old one used to have.
Yeah, you're just going right to my question. I was going to even ask that question. You're right. I tell Chris that all the time. The old stadium is something about that aura. That place was
totally
giant. The new building is cool. But it ain't the old building. It ain't the old building.
That old building.
I don't know why. Maybe it's the PSLs. It's the seat licenses. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's that aura. I don't know.
Maybe because now it's called MetLife and not Giant Stadium.
That's probably part.
The old one was Giant Stadium. So yeah, it was louder. But yeah, I was probably about 14, 15, but I've been watching since I was 8. It was in the family. It was, you know, my family bleeds blue. My uncle played football, high school football, college, pros. And, you know, he was a Giant fan. And that's basically how I became a Giant fan. You know, I was his biggest fan. And then I just followed everything he did. And I became a Giants fan around 9 years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, let me ask you this, because you guys have been all-time Giant fans. And Chris will tell you that we're the Bleed Blue Show. We are the forum for the fans as far as we talk New York football Giants, but we go deeper than just talking sports. We like to breathe. We like to get into the psyche of the fans, like yourself.
Yeah.
We like to know what you think, right, what you eat, what you drink, and stuff. What pisses you off with our team. My thing with the Giants, tell us about the fan experience, the tailgating, that aspect. You're not going to hear a lot about that on other radio shows, podcasts, and the traditional media. We get to the root of things with the fans. So you mentioned the home openers. Like, how is the energy at their –
Let me tell you, man.
Tell the audience when they listen to this.
SOG blew up the parking lot for the home opener. We teamed up with the fan van. We brought out a Hot 97 DJ. Shout out to Big Drewski on Hot 97. We brought out a couple ex-Super Bowl champions, ex-players, TD maker, Stephen Baker. We brought out Odessa Turner.
Shout out to the boys.
Who else showed up? Otis Anderson showed up. But that tailgate was like 600 people deep. I think that's the day we met you guys. It was that home opener, or it might have been the one after that. I don't remember really. But that home opener, man, was a great turnout. We took the L that day, but the turnout was great.
Let me ask, and then also, like, you guys are real deep at the home games. How do you like the home games? Do you guys like traveling on the road as much as being at the home games? Like, what's your preference? What's your likes, your dislikes, your pros and the cons as a Giants fan that goes to the home and away games? Like, what's your thoughts as far as that level of fan with the Sons of G-Men?
That level, well, Sons of G-Men is a year old. About a month ago, we turned a year. And we have plans on hitting the Redskins game this year and maybe even the Miami game coming up on Monday. But things ain't fall through, so we've just been doing the home hosting this year. But next year, we're definitely trying to start traveling.
Okay.
I've traveled to other stadiums, like when I said when my uncle played. He played for the Redskins and the Patriots. Mm-hmm. So I had that opportunity to go down to Washington and watch a game over there.
I've
been at.
Was that at FedEx Field or was that at the old
The old building in
D.C.?
Yeah.
Okay. How was that? Like we like to ask fans, like, with their experiences going to different stadiums. If you could remember when your fan was playing for the NFL and you went to that, how was the energy back at those old buildings when you was in town for those events?
Well, when you out there with the older people, like the fans that have been fans for 50 years, the environment is just different. Now it's just the new generation into the tailgating and the younger crowd, you know, and turning up how they do. But the older crowd, they were more calm. You had your rowdy ones, but it was more calm when I was out in Washington. I remember that. I didn't do much tailgating that day, but definitely more calm than it is now. I don't know if I'm explaining that right.
No, I hear that.
No, we got you. Wow. But,
how often do you guys get into the tailgates?
Oh, man, as much as I could possibly can.
Yeah.
Steve lives at the tailgates, man. I'm
a guy, I try to go to as many NFL stadiums before I die. So I'm probably about close to two-thirds of the way. Now, sometimes you get clipped. Yeah, because sometimes you get clipped with, like, let's say you went to an old stadium, but they built up a new place. Like, for instance, I should have took advantage of the Seattle game last year when I had the opportunity. But I kind of pump faked on that, and I didn't go, and I wish I would have. That was the game. We should have won that game.
We should have won that game.
Odell Beckham Jr. Was killing Richard Sherman. That was the game we should have won. And Perry Fuel went retarded on the defense. So I kind
of one of the few from Perry Fuel.
That was I don't want to remember that.
that name is we'll probably get back into the show with that, but that name itself just sort of like gives me what do you want to call it? Let's just be kind and let's say pause.
Yeah.
You guys see Spags back.
Oh yeah, tell us about that. When that happened in the off season, when Spagnuolo came back, like, what was your thoughts him coming back for his second stint?
Well, my thoughts. Son, what were your thoughts?
That was just high hopes. I mean, I was just happy all around. You know what I mean? You got a guy that's going back to a team that he pretty knows. I get it. You know, you got different players. You still got a coach, but that's home. That's home. I feel for him that was home coming back, and you know, taking these new class of these young guys and just building them up to his caliber of defense.
Hmm. Well, you know, you can't expect. I was expecting good things from Spags because we loved Spags back when we won the Super Bowls and before he left. He should have never left. He should be Coughlin's predecessor, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't put the hopes too high on coming back because the defense is not the same it was a few years back with the straight hands and the tucks and the OCs. And then that went down with JPP. And then every year we deal with the injuries we deal with, which is like never fails. Every year it's the same story with us with injuries.
You said a mouthful. Like, what happened? What was going through your mind when that JPP fiasco happened in the summer? Because I think we were, Chris, we were in between shows. I think, matter of fact, JPP thing, I think that happened on a Saturday. We were on Sunday in Austin. Yeah. I mean, we were one of the first ones to really discuss it publicly. But
that must
have
been a nice conversation.
Oh, man. Yeah. It's like why is it got to be us? It's like that dark cloud over your head. Like, why us? Why us? Why has got to be us?
Yeah.
But what happened? What was your thoughts about that when that happened? I mean, you got to be pissed off.
Definitely. First reaction is pissed off. And, you know, here we go again. Same old story. We're starting it off like that. You know, I get it. You're a human being, young kid. You know, he's living his life. But you got to know, you know, you're a professional. This is your job. So,
that's right.
You know, some moves you do, some moves you don't. And, you know, you're getting too much money and, you know, you got people looking up to you. And it's just, like I said, I get the whole atmosphere. I mean, you know, it's your life. You still got to live it. But, you know, you got to show some professionalism. You don't go out there playing fireworks or whatever the whole story was.
Man, my first thought was, what the hell were you doing that you blew your hand up?
Yes.
You know, it's like, all right, you were lighting fireworks. We all light fireworks. All right, you're a millionaire. You play professional football. You get a pass. You're lighting fireworks. No big deal. But what were you doing that you decided to blow your hand up?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Do we even know the story? He didn't put it out there yet, right?
I haven't heard anything from his end. No.
I haven't heard anything. I'm assuming he had an M80 in his hand and he forgot to let go.
Exactly. My perspective was, you're getting ready to come into a lot of money, dude.
Oh, man.
A lot of money. What I would do if I were you was get the fuck out of the spotlight. Don't do anything stupid.
Yeah,
and don't answer your phone.
That should be your main priority.
Yeah.
Don't do anything stupid.
Well, he didn't listen.
We've said it all. We've said it all. Here at SOG, we always have meetings and stuff, and we talk about these things too. And it's like we had a conversation, and we said every excuse. You know, you're rich. You're a football player. You could have paid someone to light your fireworks. You could have did it this way. You could have did it that way.
At the end of the day, it is what it is. You know what I mean? You got to go back out there. Still got faith in him.
Hopefully he learns, and it doesn't affect him too bad, I guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see him out there with that boxing glove on.
He's got the
How much
ball
can you really
rack.
Do with that arm? You can't grab nothing. You can't.
Much. He's got that ball rack thing going on from.
Yeah, it looks like he's playing with one arm now.
I see him on.
He's got effort. He's putting his effort in there.
Oh, definitely.
He's definitely
the pass
rush
has been a little bit better since he's been back, since the Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that one arm is better than half the players we had out there this beginning of the season.
True indeed.
He's quick, you know. He's just got to get used to it, I guess. But, yeah, that was just a – like Sanchez said, man, it's just – here we go again. Every season is something.
You know, okay. Why is that? Why do you think we're snake bitten? No, ask a question, fellas. Do you think we're snake bitten? Do you think we're –
There's a curse out there somewhere.
Yeah.
like the Boston curse with the Yankees and the Red Sox, the how they found a jersey under the old stadium or something like that.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I believe I'm very superstitious, so this is some kind of curse with our injury thing going on every year. It's like every year. It's not the third string guys getting hurt. It's the starters, the guys we're depending on, the guys we're anxious about when the season finally comes around. You know, and Cruz not coming back. It's just a bunch of things, man. It's every year.
It's what Final Destination has met with the poltergeist. I tell Chris all the time in the off season. It's we led the league out of 10 seasons, at least half of those seasons. So the statistics are out there. The Giants are the most injury-riddled team in the universe, and that's not even a allegation.
Yep.
That's true. And I don't know how to get around that. And I think the core of that, and when we talk to the stakeholders here on the Bleed Blue Show, we say that maybe a lot of it has to do with the CBA, when they came back with the new deal. They don't have as much practice with the, lack of two-a-days, the lack of stretching. Maybe it's our own training staff. I think it's a combination of all those things. So when a lot of you guys are out there watching preseason, OTAs, mini camps, anybody could look like a $100 million player without pads on. But when you put those pads on and it's not panning out the way you should, I mean, it seems like we're always going down. It's like every game.
You're always getting tested. Always getting tested. I mean, I'll take the high road and just say, God gives the strongest soldiers the most work. So he's putting us in this predicament. So hopefully we can, come out and show like stars that we are, that big boo.
You guys, let me ask a question. Now, because you guys are actually, when I see Sons of Giants, and I had the opportunity to meet you guys out there, and I saw how you were repping, I said, okay, these guys know everything blue. You guys.
Don't hit me with that one, man.
You guys bleed blue like a mother, as we say around here.
I like to think I know enough.
Okay. I know you, because Steve and I do this all the time, and I know you guys have the book on this. Don't you ever look at your team and go, why? Why did you do that? Why did you?
What season you want to talk about?
This is how I feel like, about. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was kind of jumping to your question. I think you were going to ask, how are we dealing with the way the play calls have been going this year?
Oh, however did you guess that?
Well, I was going with that. So the only way I can compare about how I feel about what's going on this year is a few years back, we started 0-6, which I don't think I've ever seen that out of our G-men since I've been a fan and been watching. But this year is a lot worse because we should finish out 12-4.
Exactly.
How many games have we lost in the last 2 minutes or the fourth quarter? And we're usually, Eli's the fourth quarter kid who's making wins in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. So this is a lot tougher to deal with the play calling, like that 4th-and-2, just not just kicking the field goal.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I don't mind going for it sometimes because you never really see that out of the Giants anyway. This year, you might have seen a little bit more than in the past. So I kind of don't mind it. But then you just miss the field goal at the end, and it's just, things just go wrong in the last few minutes for us this year. I can't understand why. Is it discipline? Is it the coaches? Is it the players? It's like, you can't finish for some reason. What's going on? A lot of this probably play calling.
What was going through your mind on that 4th-and-2? I mean, this is fresh in our heads still. We didn't even got to the next game yet. We came on immediately after that game, as we do it for all of our post-game shows. As Chris would tell you, I ranted. I mean, there was no way around it. I mean, you can pick all the plays that played up into that game. It's on the coach on that game. There's no way you should have kicked the field goal. I don't understand that. But the Jets have done nothing up until that point. Nothing.
No, that's what makes it even worse, man. We lost to the damn Jets in our building.
Yes, that hurt. That hurt.
Yes. How many Jets fans were around us and we had to deal with after that?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like, explain that fan experience. That before the game, the after the game. Like, how did you feel as a Giants fan walking into that building, out of that building, especially with your, you could say your co-tenant, because it's no longer the Giants own the stadium and the Jets are paying the rent like they did in the old building. It's a 50-50 thing. Right. So.
50-50, yep.
That's right.
Well, we're still the big brother. That's how we walk into that parking lot every time we go. We're big brother.
Amen.
This is our house, you know, all that. And then when it's a game against the Jets, you have a little more, you know, I wouldn't say anger, but you'd like to talk a little more shit to everybody.
All I know, leaving that game, it was don't look at me, don't talk to me, say something slick, stay away. I don't want to hear it.
Jet fans are rowdy, man.
They are.
Especially with some Coronas and liquor in them. But, yeah, man, we always have a good time out there. It's all friendly, you know. Mm-hmm. They're the little brothers, so we look out for them in a way. But when we go down like that, especially like that.
They win once in the blue. They win once in the blue. I mean, out of all the losses this year, individual San Diego and LV, let me ask you this. Which loss stung the most? Is it the Dallas game? Is it the Atlanta game?
Ooh.
Is it the Orleans game? Which
game?
Patriot.
Why that game?
Because we own the Patriots, man. I wanted to give them that first loss, man.
Again, that's what we do. We're their kryptonite, and we should have lived up to that name. And just, oh, man, that game hurt.
Just more play call failures there.
I'm not going to lie. That Dallas game is up there. I mean, that's
Take it back to that Patriot game, though. How do you not just run the ball at the end? All three plays, just run the clock.
Man,
I'm tired of seeing that five-yard line hike and a little lob into the corner of the end zone.
I'm tired of seeing them throwing it up the middle like it's nothing. Last couple of minutes, just run up the field like, you know, little marching men.
We can't stop them, really? We let them get that close so they could kick it? Oh, man.
Chris, same thing for you. I didn't even ask you. What about you? What was the toughest game for you to eat?
When I met the Sons of G-Man.
That was the Patriots.
That was a very important. Okay, hold it. Let me back all the way up.
That's a morale.
Because that first Dallas jump-off game, it was very important for the fellas to win that particular game over that particular team
at
that particular place. In that particular moment, national TV, that the morale of this team can keep propelling itself.
Yes, the morale.
And it was lost because of confusion somehow from the sideline to Eli back to the sideline again. And Jennings said some shit that I didn't understand about.
Eli told me not to run, or I don't know what it was.
But it just looked stupid from the very beginning, and that, as a result, has set the tone for everything else. But so that really should be my answer. But I was at the Patriots game when it was, and I saw the same thing you fellas saw. The game was won.
Yeah.
The game was won.
And I mean,
I'm going to go in on them. I promise not to do this, but I have to do it. I really had a problem. There was a lot of things to look at, especially, you know, Steve was always going to go on about, Odell didn't really catch the ball, whatever. I'm
he
not
did
going
it.
Into that part.
That wasn't
but I will say this. But I will say this. That Landon Collins dropped.
Oh, God.
That's
man.
You got to make that play, man.
Well, is it me, or did he just do some extra things in the air that he didn't need to do to catch that ball?
He was on some Larry Donnell shit right there.
Was he almost doing a backflip catching that ball?
Pretty much.
Before he even landed, though.
It seemed like
I'd go with that. That's a good way to say it.
He did some extra stuff there that he didn't have to do. I mean, I'm an athlete. I play sports. I'm no pro or anything, but I play sports. And when I see him jumping in the air like that, it just didn't look right. And then when I can't really blame him because when he fell, he like almost practically knocked himself out. That's why he lost the ball. But, you know, it all comes down. Let me ask you this, Chris and Steve. When it comes to that last, towards the end, when we had the game won, you just have to kill the clock, give as much less time as possible for Brady to go down the field.
Right.
We know the offensive coordinator is making the calls. But right there at the end, when they're not even running the ball, killing the clock, and they're just lobbing it into the end zone, who do you think's making those calls right there? Is it Coughlin or is it McAdoo.
Chris, you go first, okay. And then I'll go with that.
Like, wouldn't Coughlin, if it is McAdoo, wouldn't Coughlin be like, no, let's run the clock out, let's run the ball or something? But we'll never know, I guess, who's making that call right there at the end.
You know what it looks? You know what it looks like? I'm going to speculate. You know what it looks like? It looks like McAdoo says, okay, this is what we're going to do. Run this right here. Eli says, got it. Coughlin's like, wait, no, you can't do that shit. No, hey, I'm the head. Look here. No. No, we're going to do something different. But this is after Eli's already gotten the signal from McAdoo to run something else. So then it becomes a three-way confusion situation. See, before it used to funnel down. It went from Coughlin to Gilbride to Eli. Now you got a more, I would say, what do I want to call him? Coughlin, I mean, McAdoo. McAdoo's more, I don't know, up to date. I'm trying to find the word here. New wave. New school guy. And he and Coughlin, I don't think, really sees that or understands that. So there's been a kind of a coaching headbutt of sorts between those last two years. But McAdoo was here because Mr. Tisch wanted a damn change. He said,
maybe that's where the conflict is. Because, you know, Coughlin's more of a run it down your throat, old school football.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And like you said, maybe Tisch wanted to bring in that new offensive mind, that pass all down the field, pass more than run.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
Maybe that O-line just can't handle it. Maybe there's some bump of heads going on with Coughlin
part
and
McAdoo.
Maybe not.
That's part of the reason why they kind of transitioned to the West Coast office of what you see today, because they knew once Chris Snead was retiring, David Deal was on his way out. Maulers, old school type of linemen were on their way out. You had to get a Jeff Schwartz in free agency. You had to replace. Remember, they signed David Boss, who came over from the 49ers. They had to get rid of him and draft the rookie.
I didn't like
the rookie
that
last
either.
Year at the time with Richburg. So it's kind of like the West Coast offense. When what it does is you don't have to sustain your blocks as long as you would had in the Gilbride offense. So it works as long as people hold on to their assignments and you don't get injuries. Problem is, we have injuries. We can't run the ball. I mean, you're not going to run for 100 yards with the type of offensive linemen we have, because a lot of the guys we have are not really great run blockers. They're very decent in the pass blocking, hence why they choose to go with Eli to throw 44, 50 times a game. But they still have to run the ball effectively. I mean, as bad as this thing is, 5-7, whatever it is, a three-way tie for first place, you could still win this division.
I'm grateful for this Monday night game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let me ask you guys. How do you guys see a run game right now with the four running backs? And switching them off and rotating and rotating like a freaking carousel of.
I've been saying we should add a fifth running back in there. Why not? Fuck it.
Oh, the stakeholders here on this show, they've been adamant about a lead horse back. I'm all for that, but I think it's more deeper than that. I look at it more where we don't have the offensive linemen to really run the ball the way we need to effectively. So it's kind of a peanut butter and jelly situation. It's a yang for your yang. I mean, Darkwell maybe needs to get like 15 touches, 15 carries, whatever. But that's not going to solve the issue when you're running behind John Jerry. You're just not going to solve the issue when you're running behind Dallas Reynolds. So you got to still kind of have to honor it, and I agree with that. So I agree with having a lead back on top of that. Let me go to that Coughlin situation. I think it's all Coughlin, man, when it comes to the last couple minutes with the play calling. I know Eli has the power of command to audible out whenever necessary, and some of it is probably on him, i.e. the Dallas game. That game was more painful for me than the Patriot game. That's putting it on the record.
The first one.
But the first one.
Yeah, that's right. Because
we were. I was out there leaving that stadium with all those Dallas Cowboy fans heckling, talking smack. They knew we had the game because they weren't saying a peep in that stadium. We had a great tailgate. They would come by. All the Giant fans we were with, the Bleed Blue Show, and all the Giant fans from across the country, they could have said nothing to us. out there at AT&T Stadium. We got in the building. Yeah, whatever. They had the opening score. But between middle of first quarter all the way up to the end of the fourth quarter, man, they did not say nothing in that stadium to us, man.
That's Cowboy fans for you, man. Once it's bad, you don't hear a peep.
Oh, and I
anywhere.
We park way far. Like, if you ever been down to AT&T Stadium out there in Arlington, I mean, we park way past where the Texas Rangers play. Like, they play, like, in the same block. It was a far walk after that game. I think we came on after that game and ranted. That's how pissed we were, man. Hoarse voice and all, man.
Man, I'm throwing a rock at that big screen in the stadium. If I ever step foot in that place, man, I'm bringing that TV down.
No, this may not be a fair question to ask now because of what's going on. He's catching a lot of heat, but I'm still asking the question to all three of you guys. So is it safe to say that Parcells is pretty much the all-time best coach for the New York Football Giants? Because I remember a couple of years ago there was an actual debate, Coughlin versus Parcells. What about you, LB?
Yeah.
And then I'm going to go to Chris.
Man, that's a tough question, man. You know, I've always liked Coughlin, even when he was with the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. I always liked the way he coached. He seemed like the tough guy, the drill sergeant. I always liked that about a coach. And then he came into New York, and I was like, oh, it was great. And I felt like he'll be here until he retires. But when you want to compare him to Bill Parcells, I'm gonna go Parcells on that one. But it's close.
Yeah.
But it's close. You know, Parcells might have had the better teams, too.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, comparing your guys, and I'm going to have to go with Parcells, too. Ben, you know, I'm a Coughlin era type of kid, too. So it is tough, but I'm going to pay respect to the OGs.
Chris, I know.
Yeah, OG.
Chris, got to get your answer on that.
I've got to go for Parcells, too, man, because Coughlin has to lose this by default in a way, and I'm sorry for bleeding blue, but the thing is, Coughlin worked for Parcells, and he was able to sit there in the film rooms and during the coaching meetings and soak up all of that stuff that made him successful later on in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I believe it has to be Bill. And Bill, and this is going to be kind of moot to you at right now, but the 2003 team that sucked for us that enabled Tom Coughlin to get here was better than the 1982 team that Parcells had to, you know, that he was hired to take that fucking
when he inherited the one of the worst teams.
It was a hole in the ground. You know what? I tell you what, even the Meadowlands looked like shit, man. There were patches of when it rained, you know,
it was all swamp.
In there. It sucked. It was a swamp. So he had to come into that and resurrect it because people forget, no one wanted this job back then. No one wanted to. You want to coach the job? That's right.
Can't do nothing with those guys.
Yeah. So Parcells said, hey, look, I'm going to take this and I'm going to work it the best I can, but I got to have complete autonomy. And whoever, I think it was George Young was the GM, he says, man, do what you got to do, man. And we went from there.
Maybe that's what we need. There. Maybe Coughlin needs a little more strings to pull on.
Yeah. I mean, Parcells would go to George Young and say, look, I need two linebackers, man. And I'm going to need a third stringer, but I primarily need somebody to back up Carl Banks or whatever he'd say. And they worked in tandem. They got it done. You know? Now GMs have large staffs, and they don't really have to confer with a coach unless it's a unique situation. Say, like, the Patriots have one with Bill, and I'm missing somebody in my head right now. I think it was Harbaugh I'm thinking about for the Ravens. You know, that's kind of unique situations there. Or if you give all the power to the coaching, like they do in Philadelphia where it blew up in his face so far. So, different kinds of styles.
And look in Cincinnati. Cincinnati's got, you know, the coach there has got all, I would say, almost all the power.
Oh, just about all the power, exactly. But
he's got a nice little thing going.
To answer your question, Steve, I got to give it to Parcells, man. I got to put him way above any other Giant coach in the last 80. Well, they've only been around 80 years.
only 80.
Yeah, yeah, they're the oldest team. Yeah, I got to give it to him.
Yeah, give me a plus one for Parcells. I mean, he had those dominant defensive teams. And go to your point, like you said, when he goes out and gets extra defensive players, i.e. Carl Banks, when he got him from Michigan State in the mid-'80s,
yep.
you were already stacked at linebacker when you had Gary Reasons, you had Eric Carson, LT, and you went, you still went that extra step and got another linebacker. And
yeah,
then
so
year
that
after
back
that,
then, it was about defense. It was about
year,
defense back then.
Then the year after that, you got Pepper Johnson. I mean, you were stacked with linebackers for, like, that era. And I know that – I always say this, that I think the Giants could have won more championships in that era. You know, you won in 86, you won in 90, but I think they really got snake-bitten with that strike in 87. Because I thought they really had a good squad, even coming off that Super Bowl after beating the Broncos.
Yeah. And we should have went back-to-back in 07 and 08.
Oh, my God.
Until Plaque shot himself.
Yeah, my goodness. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's that curse stuff. Like, things that shouldn't be happening, like firecrackers in your hand and
right.
shooting yourself in a New York City nightclub. Stuff like that should not happen.
It's just a tri-state kind of way, man.
It is. It is. We can't help ourselves. We get in our own way. We do it to ourselves.
We keep beating ourselves, man.
But you know what? Yeah, go ahead, Dusty. No, you go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your point, Chris. I got another question.
No. I'm backing that up. We do it to ourselves. We put it this way. Every game we've lost this year, just about, with the exception of that Philly game, we lost that game. Those games.
Good.
That's why I say we should be 9-3.
At least.
You know, 9-4, something like that.
Mm-hmm. It seems
maybe
like
even better than that.
Because you're right. Because of the Dallas game, we should have won that game. The Atlanta game, we should have won that game. There's no way you should play single man coverage on Julio Jones deep in the fourth quarter. I don't care.
Yeah, come on.
That doesn't make sense to me. And then, the Philly game. Now, what's tricky about that Monday night Philly game is like that first drive was like flawless. I mean, it was picture perfect as it gets. And then it was a dud the rest of the game.
Yeah, you were like, oh yeah, we got this.
Yeah,
right away we're like, yeah, we got this.
You came out single in them.
Yes,
I think they took
their
pads off.
All time. What's your all time, guys? All time favorite Giants moment, even your worst Giants moment all time. Go with the guys from Sons of Genius.
All right, I'm gonna give you my all time that I'll never forget. It kind of had really nothing to do with the game towards the end because it really didn't matter. But was it the 07 Super Bowl or? I believe it was the 07 Super Bowl when Tom Brady had the ball like the last minute and towards the back of the end zone. They had to drive the whole field, and there was I think it was a third down, and I don't know if it was OC, but just the sack that got put on Tom Brady, that's the one play that I'll never forget.
Yes.
I believe it was a third down. It was one of the last two chances down the field, and the guy, the way the sack happened, right down the middle, up through the gap, and laid him on the floor the way he did. Oh, it was awesome.
Wow.
Or the Tyreek catch. I mean, I'm a defensive guy more, so I like the sack. The 07 Super Bowl.
Yeah, I like the Tyreek catch. Just the miracles, pretty much. The way Eli, he just escaped the whole defense, did his little jig, get out the way, had his jersey, still managed to get that ball in there. And then for Tyreek to go up and catch it the way he did, it was picture perfect. It was meant to be. You know what I mean? So that's from my point of view, that was mine. Great moment.
Cool. What about Chris, what about you?
Mine was LT against New Orleans. I think it was 1988. New Orleans had a quarterback named Bobby Hebert.
Yep.
And during a play, it was first and 10. Somehow LT got burnt on the play before that play. So the tight end caught the ball over him and got the first down, whatever it was. But it incensed him. LT was like freaking smoke coming out of his nose type shit.
Pissed him off.
Yeah. And Bobby Hebert rolled right, and LT was on Bobby Hebert rolled to his right. LT was on his left. Of course, he was the right linebacker, right side linebacker. So somehow LT ran all the way past the tight end that was supposed to block him. another running back that tried to pick up LT, smacked him aside like a little bitch. It went right past the lineman, and he ran almost to the other side of the field. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send it to you guys. And he grabbed A-Bear by his collar and basically
and threw
him like a fucking rag doll.
Yeah,
yeah, now I know what you're talking about.
And I said, oh, shit. I can't believe it.
He was taking flight.
I said, don't ever piss the dude off again. That's my ultimate Giants moment. That's when I remember saying, oh, yeah. Yeah, this is my team.
I didn't get to watch much of LT in his days. The closest thing I had to that was Strahan.
Oh, well,
who to me is, I mean, listen, LT is a god. He's the best linebacker to ever do it. But since I watched more Strahan than anything, he's kind of like my god in my era.
Mm-hmm. Strahan was the best player ever against the run. I mean, best lineman I've ever seen against the run ever, man. Mm. Ever. He could play that fucking run. You couldn't run past his ass.
Him and John Runyon from the Eagles used to have wars, man. Those old days when they were at the old vet before they went to the link. Mm-hmm. Him versus Runyon, that was used to be great to watch, man. That was like chess.
Yeah.
To watch those the right tackle versus Strahan at defensive end, and those used to be classic matches, one-on-one matchups. Let me put my my favorite moment. I should say the 07 Super Bowl because of how many Patriots fans we pissed off that day. I loved it. Because we all know that in that Week 17 game, we had them beat, and then we got burnt on a deep route by Randy Moss.
Yep.
Sam Madison lost them. Yep. Yeah, Sam Madison lost them. That's cool. But to come back and win that game, that was pretty epic, knowing that they were on the brink of, I mean, history, 18-0. I mean, that still is real crazy.
They tasted it. They had it right there in their hands. We just smashed it. Like, you're not touching that. It's no greater feeling.
But for whatever reason, my game is the 41-0 game beating Minnesota at the stadium, at the old house, for the NFC Championship game, going to the Super Bowl. For whatever reason, because I think that day I was younger, probably early 20s, everybody pretty much written this off, even though we were the home team. And we're talking about a Minnesota high-power offense. I mean, they had Hall of Famers on that team on offense, all-pro running back. And Culpepper was leading the way. And the fact that we did what we did that day, 41-0, pitched the shutout.
The blowout, yeah.
That's probably the most perfect game I could think of in, like, the last pretty much this century. The 41-0 game stuck out for me. What about the worst game for you guys, LV and Santiago? What about your worst Giants game? Nightmares. You can't sleep at night. Cold sweat. It pisses you off. Like, what type of worst game for you?
I'm going to say, like, 5 out of 7 losses this year.
Thank you. That would have been my answer. Yeah.
That's my answer. I kept it simple.
Go ahead, Chris. I'll let you take that one first. Yeah, thank you.
The worst. Well, there's a billion of them, but you know what? Close. There's a lot of close reference the last 3 years. there is. I don't know if I can answer that.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I'll throw this one out there. That pretty much, boy. Deshaun Jackson running the back.
I knew he's going there.
Man, listen.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's,
as a kid, I remember. I got one. Just hit me. I remember, sure. I drew tears on this one. Yeah, I remember this. We were eliminated. I think we were eliminated. I was at the Meadowlands for this game. I don't know whether we were eliminated from the playoffs or it was a playoff game itself. I don't remember, but I know a Jersey native, a guy named Willie Flipper Anderson, that played for
the Flipper Anderson game. Oh, God.
He caught that goddamn long-ass pass from Jim Everett in the 80s.
Yeah.
And just,
oh, my goodness.
And he scored the touchdown to end the game, and he kept running through the tunnel.
Running through the tunnel.
I said, you son of a bitch. There must have been about 80 Giants fans waiting for that motherfucker, boy. That was a hurtful game. But, yeah, there you go.
Oh,
that's my answer.
Yeah, that is Chris. How can I forget that game? You're right about that.
Yes,
I'm with him on this, the DeSean Jackson game, knowing that you were smoking Philadelphia. We were actually in position to be in the playoffs that season, smoking Philly in the first half. And I think Vic was quarterbacking, and they made a miraculous comeback. But why would you punt the ball to DeSean Jackson?
I'll never forget Coughlin's reaction.
And then I got these images of him slamming the clipboard onto the mat. It just
Down on one knee, basically.
That's not even my worst game. That's the crazy part. That may not even. I'll take it a worse step. Chris, you guys probably remember the divisional playoff game in San Fran, and I think '02, '03 when we were up 38-14 on the 49ers. Jeff Garcia, Terrell Owens. I could not get over that game for a
while.
It was a playoff game, and they won 39-30. And we had the botch snap for the field goal attempt. Anything could go bad.
This game, there's too many games that we can talk about.
Yeah, that just hurt. Just the memory of that. Oh, man.
That sucked. That was probably the worst, because it was a playoff game. The Philly game, to me, that really set us back. That stung. I don't think Giant fans really got over that, because that was really the rise of social media, where Giant fans were coming together, and they were all distaste of, 5 years ago when that happened. And then because the very next week, we got buried at Green Bay, because I don't think that team showed up at Green Bay, because we knew we were done after that.
That
went to hiatus.
DeSean Jackson deflated us on that one little play there.
And it was because it was DeSean Jackson. That's the point I can't stand. I can't stand that guy.
That crappy son of a – yeah, man.
Or maybe not even – or the 2000 Super Bowl that we should have won.
No.
I'll go with that one.
Nah, the Ravens had all-time defense. I did that. I think we were cool just being showing up and shaking their hands, man. That one hit they put on Ron Dixon in that game, I think they set the tone, man. The Ravens had all-time defense. I could
have. Yeah, that defense was tough.
Yeah, they were cool.
But
man,
we could definitely play a lot better, man. It was a little embarrassing.
That I agree with. I mean, they couldn't get Tiki Barber the ball. Kerry Collins had a real bad game with picks. It was ugly. And then I remember Brandon Stokely beating us between the hash for a touchdown. They had it going on that year, because I think they beat the Titans? I think they beat the Titans to get into the Super Bowl, because that was the Titans team. They had Eddie George.
You sure? I thought it was the Broncos. Okay, I could have been wrong.
Eddie George.
Steve McNair. They had guys like that, because I think they went to the Super Bowl the next year and lost to the Rams, I believe. That's correct.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Wow, man.
Because you got
anything? Let me ask you guys another question. Since we're on the subject of, the worst moments ever, how do I ask this question? What is your most bizarre remembrance? When I say that, I mean most. Let's not say bizarre. Let's just say best memory. In other words, like for me, I liked when Shockey caught that one touchdown against Philadelphia that time when he was supposed to be the doghouse. You know, the little things like that.
Man,
you know,
I love Shockey, man. Why do you have to be such
a... I sure did. And Troy Vincent, he looked at Troy Vincent in the face and went, yeah, bitch, yeah. I love that meant a lot to me. You guys got any memories like that, man, where you can just look back at the Giants, just a moment in Giants history, and you go, wow, man, I really miss that. You know, a Bavaro moment or Rodney Hampton.
I can't pick one player. I'm just going to go to when we had that nice offensive line and Tiki Barber not fumbling and just running his ass off and these guys blocking their asses off. Those were my good days, the days I wish I can go back to, the whole team can go back to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
man.
They had a good line around the time Tiki before he left the team, after 06, I believe. Because they had Pettigrew was on his last run with the Giants. They had David Dill was all over the offensive line. He was going from left guard, tackle. Mm-hmm. Then they brought in Kareem McKenzie when he came over from the Jets. You already know when Chris Snead came over, came onto the team when Coughlin drafted his son-in-law from Boston College and O'Hara came over. I mean, it was a good intact line, man. It was a solid group of five guys who knew what the hell they were doing.
Earth, wind, and fire.
That's what I was going to say. Just having that presence, earth, wind, and fire, those guys are running it with fear. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just seeing Brandon Jacob lower his shoulder and seeing those defensive guys just fly back, it's a beautiful thing. Watching those guys, Bradshaw, the way he jukes them, I mean, it was a beautiful thing watching those guys.
Yeah, Bradshaw was a mini Jacobs.
That was a tough son of a gun. Because one of my favorite Bradshaw moments was when we had a playoff clincher at Buffalo in the snow. Matter of fact, that was the year we won the Super Bowl. When we went we beat the Patriots. He galloped in the snow because you know he was a late round draft pick from I think it was what West Virginia was that? Marshall was it?
Minnesota.
No, it was in Minnesota. It was the same school Randy Moss went to. Marshall, right?
It was Marshall? Really? I thought he was in Minnesota. Okay, my bad. Nah. I didn't know.
That was, yeah, but that was one of my favorite Bradshaw moments. And, of course, what he did at the second Super Bowl against the Patriots when he did the sit-down at the goal line.
Yeah,
I actually have that picture of him sitting on the end zone, signed picture. It's a nice little picture.
Who's your favorite Giants player? Who's your favorite Giant player of all time? You said Strahan, I believe. That's your favorite?
Yeah, I would say I'll give you a top three.
I'm gonna go
LT, Strahan, and Eli. That's where I'm going with it.
Yeah.
What about you, Santiago? What about you?
It's tough. Eli up there, but I'm an LT fan. Like Elvio said before, that defense, I like me some good defense, hard-hitting, trash-talking, like feared on the field. LT's my guy, man.
Is there a defense like that anymore? Is the game too soft now, the way the rules are different?
Because of the cater to quarterbacks, man.
Yeah, of course.
Man. Yeah, I think so, man. I agree with that. It's you can't really put your hands on the guy after 5 yards, which changes a lot with route running. They're soft. They'll throw in any flex. So it's kind of tough with that.
It's not
Chris, what
dirty
about,
anymore.
Chris, who's your favorite Giant?
Well, LT has he's the automatic default number one for any Giant fan, man. He has to be right there. But and number three for me would be Eli too. But I gotta give a 3A to Phil Sims, and
that's
I gotta
good.
Give my number
yes.
two definitely the guy that doesn't get talked about as much. And that's Harry Carson. Harry Carson showed up when they were in the Yale Bowl in the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, when he sucked badly, and he was the only one really kicking ass. In fact, back then when the All-Star team, what's that called, the Pro Bowl game, when it meant something, people actually watched it, he was our only representative. And I remember a bunch of guys saying to me, you know, because I was a kid, a bunch of guys saying to me, you guys only got one All-Pro. Ah! I was like, okay. Because they were all Steelers or Cowboys or whatever. And I was like, that's okay. You know, at least he showed up. And it was Harry Carson. And he kept being Harry Carson.
I remember we were at an event, the three of us, a few months back, and we were hanging out with LT. He was there doing some signings. So we ended up in the back room with him where he was doing he was just signing a bunch of jerseys privately. It was maybe 8 of us in that room while he's signing everything. He's bullshitting. We're talking to everybody. And he told me how him and Carson used to feed off each other.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
He would say, like, we were like brothers out there, man.
Wow.
I would say my favorite Giant, some people say his name. I was really a big Jesse Armstead fan. I loved him when he came out.
Jesse Armstead.
Yeah, I was a Jesse Armstead guy, man. He was a monster. Him and Strahan for that couple-year run. Now, you guys, you mentioned it, Al. that you mentioned three-fourths of the what I would put in the New York Football Giants Mount Rushmore. Chris, I never asked you that because I was going to tell you I was going to ask you that question. Who's your Mount Rushmore, your top four Giants? Now, you said three of the four. I would have said you said LT, Strahan, and Eli. You got a fourth guy for us? Or that
Do I have a fourth one?
I would go with Frank Gifford. I don't know about you guys, but
yes. Yes.
But what about
I mean, from everything you hear about Gifford, you look at the – this guy played what? Every position he wanted to play?
Pretty much.
You know what? That, yeah, that's a great answer. I will put Gifford on there, yo.
Yeah.
There might be other players that I can't think of right now that might even replace the first three I said. LT right. definitely being one of them, but I like that Gifford one, yeah. That guy played everything.
Yeah.
He's the one that brought the Giants back to – to a little glory back in that day.
Yeah.
Before Parcells was even in the mix. You know, back in what was it, the 50s?
60s? Yeah, the 50s NFL championship days versus teams like the Colts.
Yeah.
At the old Yankee Stadium.
Yep.
He
was like pretty much your golden boy. He was your superstar at that time.
Yes, he was. Gifford is responsible for a few things in sports, though. Okay, Gifford was, like Steve said, he was the first real golden boy. He was the first one to get regular commercials. You know, he was hawking everything back then from transistor
the
radios. Yeah, and what I loved about the late Frank Gifford is, man, even though he became a Monday Night Football announcer and, you know, you saw him, you know, doing other things like for corporate NFL and whatever, the dude was a lifetime Giant. Lifetime.
Yeah.
Every time the Giants had, you know, the end of the year in review stuff there, where they have the film and stuff, that's just Gifford's voice you hear. Gifford always was in the organization. And a lot of the things he did were, you know, because you're not supposed to be working for a team and for the NFL and for ABC. But nobody said nothing to Frank Gifford. They let him go ahead. And Frank Gifford always would tell you, I'm a Giant for life. He had the rings that he wore right along.
Royalty.
I mean, you know, Kathy Lee would come on, man, on her show, man, with shit around her neck. People were like diehard. And I loved that shit, man. He was the first MVP we ever had.
Yep.
You know, he was, league MVP, real shit. You know, he just was a real hardcore representative of all things blue. So, yes, his head belongs right up there with in my opinion, with LT, Eli, and I want to put Parcells' face right there.
I was going to say that.
Oh, yeah,
yes,
yeah. Okay. I didn't even think about that.
I really do.
Hold on. If you're going to put a coach, why not the owner? Why not Wellington Mirror? Why not?
I said I want to put Parcells right there, but you know what? No,
all right, so maybe we should just start all over with this. Let's just start all over.
Yeah, let's start all over.
Let's
okay,
go Parcells, Mara.
One for the players and one for the coaches and executives.
Let's go two coaches, an owner, and a player.
Okay.
No, they're all good names, man. The history is deep with the Giants.
Yeah, the one player's got to be LT. Then if you want to put the coach, I'll put Parcells, I'll put Mara, and then, damn it, the fourth one's a tough one. Hey, you can flip a coin for me, man, however you want to do it.
Let's do like seven. Let's do like seven guys.
It'll be more of a
like
role
it's you gotta you know what truth be told because I fell in love so much as a teenager because I know I'm a lot older than you guys okay and I fell in
Yo,
love
you listen Chris your facts your knowledge shows it
well I appreciate that I'll take that
I'm a little
but,
jealous
no,
though
really, I will thank you I appreciate it. But here's the thing I fell so much in love with the Giants. Let me just tell you my background real quick. I'm from Queens, so that's Jets country. Okay? And when I was growing up, everything Namath could take a shit and all of a sudden he would be on the front page. You know, they loved him. Namath did this, and the Jets are so much better, and the Giants suck. And the Giants suck. And Namath and the Jets won, and the Giants suck. And the Jets tickets are on sale here, and the Giants suck. And the Giants suck. Everything is the Giants suck. And I'm one of these guys that I am totally for the underdog. You know?
Yeah.
And so I started doing my research, and I realized that Wellington Mara is probably indirectly responsible for us four guys talking right now on a podcast going throughout America, in a way. He's responsible for all the television revenue.
I hear what you're saying.
Revenue. He's responsible for the uniforms and licensing and the gigantic Super Bowls that we watch every year. It's indirectly tied to Wellington Mara. Before, it was just the Football League. Wellington was the guy. His father was the one who put all of this together. You know, he's like working for the mob and all that. And back then in the 20s, man, when the Giants started, you know, it was basically, you know, pro football was laughable. It was like pro wrestling. You know, nobody.
Yeah, it was guys that were putting down train tracks. Like, all right, let's go play some football now.
Yeah, it was a thing to do. Hey, you want to make $25 this weekend? Doing what? Playing football. Play center. What?
Yeah, bring your own cleats.
I can be, because, you know, you got to remember there was no, you know, that's back in the days, man, where $10 a week would get your ass fed, you know, family of four. I mean, you're talking about $25 just to go out there for 3 hours and knock heads with some guys, man, in some fucking backfield, you know? And so that was some good shit. But the Steelmen did it and all that kind of stuff. And Steve Mara was the one who had the inner city guys do it. And then went from there. And Wellington is the one who put all the television rights shits together. Look, right now, there's a game on tonight. I forgot who it is.
Watching it right now. It's the Vikings-Cardinals.
Vikings-Cardinals are playing, and guess what? The Giants are getting a piece of that money.
Break bread, baby. Break bread.
Because that's how Wellington Barra set this shit up. So, yeah, you know what?
Jerry Jones, too.
He's going on the Mount Rushmore, Steve. There you go.
Okay. Let me ask you guys, what team do you can't stand? What team you hate the most in the NFL?
Yeah.
The opposing team.
I'll tell you what, that is the easiest question today. That is the easiest question today. I already told you I'll take that TV down if I ever go over there.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, let me ask you this. I'll even ask you an even depth question. Why is it them and not, let's say, a team like Philly or maybe Washington or maybe the Jets or New England? Like, why the team with the big TV screen?
Want to stab at that shot? It's just the natural rivalry. Natural rivalry from his history.
I was hoping you were going to say fans.
Hmm?
It's the fans. To me, it's the fans that make me hate them.
That's what I'm saying. Rivalry in the stadium.
Those fans are the most stubborn fans that I've ever been around. The fans really make me hate the Cowboys. Out of all 32 teams, the Cowboys. 100%.
Is that same answer for you, Santiago? Same answer for you?
In a sense, I was trying to think outside the box, and Philly did come up. And like you said, because of the fan, it's just nasty. No respect out there. I mean, like you said, we saw it back from Deshaun. I know I keep bringing up Deshaun, but I hate the fucking guy. I hate the guy.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So, you know, besides Dallas, the obvious, they're just nasty. Nasty group.
The other night was the first time I ever cheered for Deshaun Jackson.
Oh, God. I didn't even watch the game. I would never.
I saw him choke on that kick return. I'm like, in a way, I'm like, yes, I hate you. But, Dan, we need you guys to win. And then when he caught that touchdown a few plays later, I was kind of excited.
Yeah. Now, Chris, share everybody who you hate. I know who it is, but you can let the guys know. Audience will listen to this audio.
Can I guess?
Sure, go
Please
ahead.
Do.
What are you going to say, Chris? Is it the division? In the division?
It's in the division, yes.
It's in the division. Are you going to say the Redskins?
No, I'm not going to say that.
The Eagles, all right.
They're puke green fuckers.
I cannot
stand these sons of bitches, man. Here's the thing.
When Dallas and Puke Green plays each other, I always cheer for the Cowgirl. Yes, I do. As blasphemous as that sounds, and I'm gonna tell you why. At least the Cowgirls can point to something on their wall or their trophy.
Yes.
And say, look,
I knew you were gonna go there.
And so I'm always going up to Eagles fans. I live here in South Jersey, man. Approximately 25 minutes away from the league.
You're right there in the heart.
And these fuckers act like they are entitled
all of this privilege because they have a long history of being in the NFL.
But you didn't win shit.
Yeah.
You never won shit. You never. When you got to the dance, you fucking fell apart. One time, you ran out. And both times they ran out of gas. When they played the Raiders, which was a wild card team.
Oh, yeah. They
got their ass beat. And then years later, 2004, all I can remember is Donovan throwing up on the fucking field.
Yeah.
So what are you talking about? You never won shit, but you act like you do, and you act like. But then what even adds insult to injury, man, is that they turn around and beat our ass, you know. And I have nothing to say for the next 2 days, you know. Even though I have a car, I have a Suzuki that's decal. It's giant tricked out, you know.
Okay.
And I'll drive that shit, and people will point and laugh at the shit sometimes after the Eagles beat our ass, right? And then after we won the Super Bowl, it's like they run away from the shit like it's a kryptonite.
Those fans take every little thing they can get because they have really nothing. Every little thing. We beat you one time in the last 3 years. We're better than you now. But like you said, they got nothing. They're the laughing stock.
They've been a thorn in the Giants, as let's say, I don't know, the last 11, 12 seasons. Now, I'm with you on Dallas. I still can't stand Dallas as my team. That's a team that I can't stand because they are obnoxious. But when I really look at them deeper, And I have to explain to the audience here on the Bleed Blue Show, and I explained this to Chris. A lot of those Cowboy fans are really technically Cowboy fans. When I look and do my research, and then I look into this real psychologically, a lot of these Cowboy fans are really they're like distraught bandwagon fans. They're not really necessarily.
Oh yeah.
I don't really count bandwagon fans part of a fan base. Like that's why the Giant fans. We say this before, like the Steelers, the Packers, and the Giants. Those are your top three fan bases in the NFL as far as repping at your home games, repping at your away games. You can watch. We were in Tampa Bay earlier this year, and I mean the place was literally 50-50 down there in Tampa. I mean nobody travels better than the Giants, maybe except for the Steelers and the Packers. And when you go to these Cowboy fans, I could throw them a Cowboy question; they should know. Like, you ask them a question about the team, and they don't even have the answer. Some of these people do not even understand their own history. I can't, as a fan, respect you as another fan if you can't answer simple questions as far as stuff you should know.
I concur.
As far as the bandwagon fans. But as far as, like, the Patriot fans are kind of obnoxious. But Philly, I'm kind of with Chris as far as, like, the Philly fans, they, man, I mean, this is what they, I mean, it's 24/7, 365. Like, the Giant fans, it's just, they just happen one shot.
Yep. Yep.
So kind of, and plus it's regional too. It's like what, hour and some change between stadiums,
something like that. Yeah, don't remind me.
I'd say we just took the Cowboys out of the NFC East. Get rid of them.
There was some talk about 6 years ago that Atlanta and the Cowboys were supposed to switch. That was some talk. Earlier than that.
Lurie, Schneider. Marin Tisch and Jones, those are the four owners of those teams. I don't think they know when the Cowboys are a home team, those Redskins fans, the Giant fans, those Eagle fans are coming to that stadium. They're going to buy those tickets for marked up prices. Same thing with the Giants. Like you could have the primetime games. They're not going to get rid of the NFC East because that is as bad as the division has been this season. They know the fans are going to show up regardless teams.
Right.
Because three of the teams are on that I-95 corridor because those are the most hardest of the hard fans right there.
Right.
I would say in addition to that, I was always a believer they should realign the division. That may even be a discussion for another day. I always said that the Jacksonville and Miami should be in the same division, but that's another talk for another day.
They should be. They're right next to each other.
Exactly. You put them in the South, the Dolphins in the South, and move Baltimore to the East and move Indianapolis to the North. And that makes more sense regionally for all three of those teams. But
I'll tell you what. I'm looking forward to the Carolina game. And I'm hoping it'll be 13-0.
Please do tell. Why that game? What about the tailgate? Leading up to the game, the events? Like, why that game?
As far as tailgate, we have nothing planned as of right now. But the way the weather's been lately, we might have to go tailgate that game. But I would like to see the Panthers be 13-0 coming to our house and us giving them that first loss.
That'd be pretty.
That'll make the season all good up to now. I'll forget about everything the last few weeks.
How confident are you with that game? As far as, you know, they're, as of now, they have a goose egg in the loss column. You know, it's kind of funny. We discussed that here on the show before, where that team is kind of built how the old Giant teams are built. I mean, they have strong linebacker play. Mm-hmm. They run the ball. They never really had no flashy wide receiver. That's kind of like a throwback Giants team, if you really think about it.
They got a beast of a tight end. We don't have a tight end anymore.
They got Bavaro Shockey and Greg Olsen in a way. Without the cockiness. Just as far as play on
exactly.
the field.
Yeah.
That'll be a great – I want them to be 13-0. I want them to win this week, come see us undefeated. I'm the type of guy that I don't keep my hopes up. I'll prepare myself for the worst. So I'll go into that game like, all right, we probably don't stand a chance beating these guys. So when we do beat them, I can be, like, extra excited. You follow what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, definitely do.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think we'll take care of Miami on Monday. We have to, coming after these last 2 weeks. We got to come out of this game, and I want to see a blowout. I want to see everything clicking correct.
Let's talk about that game even a little bit. We'll be discussing that on our preview show this weekend. But what is something about, let's say, I don't know, they're going down to Miami, and when you hear the word Miami, you're talking about parties, you're talking about, you know, the females, the women, the guy, you think it's a distraction going, you have to play down there in that South Beach area, you think we're professional enough to get out, because, I mean, we've got to be realistic, these guys who go to some of these cities, man, they wild the F
out. Yeah. If I was in their shoes right now, I'd already have plans for my weekend over there.
Hey, all I got to say is Coughlin. Coughlin's still Coughlin.
Yeah.
Be tough on him. In the house by 9.
That's bad. You don't disrespect that. He says it. Them players, are, you know, if they real hard-headed, them players are going to be on their P's and Q's.
Yeah. I think they'll be focused this time. You know what's at stake, man. I don't think it's gonna be a real game this time. I don't know.
I'm so inconsistent, man. So inconsistent. We basically got one weapon out there. We got OBJ. The running game's doing nothing for us, which kind of declines our passing game. Then the defense, we're all messed up in the defense. But thinking about going to Miami, they're also inconsistent. They might have a better line defensively than we have. You know, Ruben Randle, he's got to step up a little more. I need to see that running game step up a little more.
A little more?
Yeah. Well, okay, a lot more. I'll give it to you.
What about guys like Ruben Randle? We hear a lot of Giant fans all season. Well, the last couple of seasons on him. His play has been up and down. Like, how do you look at number 82 as far as his play on the field?
Yeah.
Inconsistent.
Yeah, it's like
it's
you said,
scary.
Up and down.
You don't know if that ball is going to be a massive play, is going to have a huge play, or is it just going to get dropped, tipped, intercepted. Who knows?
You know when
the ball is going OBJ's way, you're like, all right, 90% chance he's going to catch this ball, he'll break a tackle, he'll do this. But when it comes to the other guys, it's less than 50%. You don't have the confidence there. Maybe that's how Eli feels, too. Maybe he doesn't have the confidence in some of these guys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just inconsistent, man. I thought this offense would be a lot better.
I did, too.
I wouldn't say that for the defense, but I thought the offense would just put up crazy points every week.
I mean, hell, they did put up 49 in New Orleans, though. I mean, I know it's
and we still lost that game. That's another game.
I hated that game.
Oh, my gosh.
What a shootout that was,
huh?
I hated being at that game. I was at that game, too. I hated it. I'm like you guys. I'm more defensive-minded. I'd rather, like, you know, defense is all about will. And it was just pretty much arena football that game. I couldn't stand that game. I hated that game. just watch that. You paid that good money to watch teams go up and down the field like that. That's not – no. This is not the video game. I'm not here to watch that. But what about, like Randall, but is it really his fault? Because we know that technically he's really the third wide receiver. I mean, Cruz was supposed to be there, and he's really our number two slot. But, I mean, could we really fault the guy knowing that he's really our number three? And they talk about, oh, he's got to get paid. He's going to get paid. Well, he's really the third wide receiver. I don't know.
You know, when it comes to that, it's like Brady, Tom Brady. He makes anybody. The guy can be the seventh string receiver, and Brady's going to make him look good. As long as he's going at 100%, he's doing what he's got to do. I'm starting to think maybe Ruben Randall's not 100%. Maybe something's been bothering him all week. Because sometimes it looks like he's moving slow, or he's not cutting at 100%. Or, you know what I'm saying? But like you say, he is the third receiver. He's not even the second. So why do we expect so much out of him? I expect out of all receivers and running, maybe not running backs, but receivers and tight ends, when you got Eli throwing you the ball, as long as Eli's getting protection, which he's not, Eli can be just like Brady. He can make anybody a superstar. Which was going on with OBJ.
Right. I don't think.
But OBJ's got talent, though.
He does. It does. But you know what? If you look back, for instance, at that play, that fourth and whatever, when they threw it on fourth down the other day, okay, and everybody got pissed off, and they directed their anger at Coughlin. Well, if you look back at that again, you'll notice that Ruben Randall doesn't really finish the route, man. He doesn't really – he sort of stops.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really
– half-assed it.
He half-assed it, and he has a history of that. He did that about four times during the 0-6 streak a couple of years ago. And he has a problem finishing a fucking play. And that, for guys like us, it fucking makes your hair grow grayer by the minute.
Yeah, it makes you say to yourself, put me out there, coach.
No shit. So I really think that right along with everything else, and I'm not going to make a big thing out of it right now, but right along with everything else, he needs to fucking – I'll see him later on, too, at the end of the year. Goodbye. We need a guy that really wants to play here, man. And I don't know what his issue is, man, but he dogs it a lot. A lot. It doesn't matter if ODB's on the other side, Cruz is on the other side, Harris, and Jernigan a couple of years ago. Doesn't matter. He's always dogging it. And he's my – I wish you – hey, Steve, you should have asked, who's your least favorite Giant?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a great question. I didn't even think of that.
Well, that was mine.
Might as well
that's my guy
it.
Right there.
All right, give Chris credit.
That's my guy. That's my dude right there. After that, I don't have anybody else to complain about because we're all – most of the guys are fifth-rounders or whatever, and you really can't really –
it's a bunch of plugs right now.
Yeah, you can't bitch too much, I guess. But that's where I'm at with that. That's
we're at 5-7, tied, and we're still alive. Thank God.
We always seem to do shit like that, too. You know, remember we were 0-6? We started off 0-6 a couple of years ago, and we were in it in the 13th week?
Yep. And you're like, only if we could have won two out of those six games.
I know. It's crazy. It's fucking crazy, man.
All you really ask for is just be consistent, get some playoff berths, and just make a run for whatever it is. Just not getting into the playoffs the last – since pretty much your Super Bowl run, the last time you made – I mean, you just got to give the fans hope. Make a playoff berth. I mean, I'm on the side of the Giants. I've even heard some Giant fans say, well, we should tank the season and we should get a high draft pick. I definitely
no.
do not believe in that. Because the NFL is a whole different animal than
the NBA.
Than the NBA. Because the NBA, as Chris will tell you, we root for the New York Knicks on this platform as well. And
I'm a Knicks fan.
A lot of Knicks fans had that mentality. They had that in the last year. We should tank every game. We should tank every game. And we should get the number one, two pick, the top two pick, whatever. But the situation that played up for us right now, we may have the rookie of the year right now. The team is playing well.
Never
know.
I didn't mind that draft pick at all.
I was happy with
that draft pick.
I'll be honest. I was pissed.
We didn't get the first two big guys. And I'm like, right. Oh, man, those two guys are already gone. I didn't even know who Porzingis was until
they picked
him.
No, not until they picked him. A few minutes before the Knicks had their pick, you know, they put up videos of some guys that might be going up next. And they put up a video of Porzingis, and they showed him running around like he was a guard, 7'2", doing all this. I'm like, yo, that's the guy we need. We need a big man who can move, who's got agility to him. We don't need another guard, another four. We need a big man. And I was happy with that pick.
I was pissed. But I wasn't pissed at the draft.
Were you?
I wasn't pissed at the draft as a whole, because when you got Jerry and Grant from Notre Dame, I was like, oh, man, we got 2-for-1 up in this? Like, I'll ride with that.
Yeah.
If we would have,
I'm not feeling the way Grant's playing right now, man. He seems scared out there.
It's the coach. The coach put fear in his head, man. The coach messed
that's
that up.
That's a coach thing, man.
Yeah, coach, he don't mess that up.
He stops his dribble too much, I think.
Coach got it all messed up right now. That's not how he was playing it when he was the ACC Player of the Year. He was a high school pretty much legend down there in Maryland. You know, his high school teammate was Victor Oladipo. You know the guy play. He can play with some talent. He can play with some talent.
And he's got it in his blood, too.
Let me ask you a quick question on the Giants. Now, if you had to put your all defensive line, is it going to be Strahan? Would you put in Tuck, Umanyora, JPP? Would you move, because the Giants play the 3-4, so technically you could move one of those linebackers at defensive end. You could put maybe a guy George, guy from the 70s, Chris.
Martin.
There you go. George Martin.
Yeah,
I mean, you got a plethora of defensive guys. Who's your top defensive line would be if you had to pick some names?
You said it right in the beginning. Like I said, I'm more of the newer generation, so I'm gonna go. Am I going 4 or am I going 3?
I would go 4. We'll go 4-3.
Let's go 4-3. All right, so let's go. Yeah. Let's go Strahan, OC.
Mm-hmm.
See, now I want to throw Tuck in there. Put him in the middle somewhere. Make him a defensive tackle for now.
Yep.
So we're gonna go Tuck, OC, JPP, and Strahan. That would be sick.
Chris, what about you? Same thing or?
Come back to me because I have to think about that.
Well, Santiago, the sergeant's out. His phone is dead. Just died on.
Okay.
Okay. I got it from the top of my head. Let's just do it this way. Because you know why? Because I wanted to go all the way through.
Yep.
My two defensive ends are definitely Strahan. And I have to go with Leonard Marshall, man. I really do.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I got to do that.
I just got to meet Leonard Marshall not too long ago. That was a pretty good guy.
How did that go?
Oh, we were at the starter. The starter just came out with a new jacket, the 25th anniversary Giants jacket, the starter fleece. What's his name?
Carl Banks.
They were doing the event. They were doing the release at a sneaker stop in Jersey City. So it was Leonard Marshall. It was Otis Anderson. It was Stephen Baker. And Carl Banks. So we were out there hanging out with them, the limited hats. No, Marshall, a big guy, man. He was the biggest one out of all of them.
Chris and LV, let me ask you this. You think he probably put one of the most important hits in this franchise's history with that hit on Montana in the NFC Championship game?
You talking about Jim Burt or you talking about Leonard Marshall?
Leonard Marshall. Or are you – Burt either. But if you had to put an important hit on –
Jim Burt separated – I'm thinking about the 86 team that team that won our first Super Bowl team.
That was the home game, the blowout.
I was thinking about that. Leonard Marshall, of course. Every time Montana hurt, it came from us. Didn't come from the Bears, didn't come from the Cowboys, came from us. So, yes, I would go yes on that shit. That hurt me, fuck.
I like the hit on Tony Romo that put him out.
Oh, when you ended his season, who was that? Was it JPP or was it Tuck?
I'm thinking it was Tuck.
Okay, Tuck. Yeah, that was in Dallas. Was in the Dallas Stadium. I don't recall if we opened. No, it may have been the year we opened the stadium with that 33-31 win, I believe. I think that was the score. First game when we we closed out the old building and then went to their new house and won. But I think that was the game we blocked the field goal. I think that was the game. I'm not exactly sure. I can't remember. Because we went like 3-0, 4-0 before we started losing in that place. But yeah, when Romo got knocked out, I know a lot of Cowboys were real bitter like about that.
Romo's career is over.
You think so? I've been feeling the same way.
That age catches up.
You can also argue that he was hurt. You know, he's had two straight seasons of injuries, hardcore injuries.
Yep.
So, yeah, you can make that easy argument. I think he's about done too. That's, you know, I really do.
How was your thoughts on Tiki Barber?
Oh, I love him. I mean, I'm not gonna go after he retired and he started talking his shit. But while he played for us, especially when Coughlin came in, I love Barber, hard runner, man.
Mm-hmm.
I put him up there as one of the best running backs for us ever.
I'm with you.
In some ways, he might have been the best.
Hands down the best. Yep. I'm sure he holds a few records still.
He does. I think he might hold about 6 or 7 running back records for the Giants. But see, he tarnished it, man. And you can't get past that. And
that's why he'll never be royalty.
That's the problem. He'll never be royalty because of that.
Because of that,
That's his problem. That's the only problem I have with the guy. Other than that, did he do his job? Was he a great Giant? Of course he was. No doubt about that. No doubt about it. That's easy pickings right there.
Mm-hmm.
No problem.
I'm with you.
But
I'm one of the guys on the outside looking in. As far as I didn't really mind the shit talking after his career was over. I mean, I think it was a little overblown, but I'm one of those guys. Like, I don't mind a guy speaking his mind as long as you backed it up on the field when you play or while you're playing. And when he used to put fear in those teams, I remember the game he destroyed the Rams. There was a game, you know, Philly could have stand him. I talked to Eagle fans, and they were like, man, that Tiki Barber guy you guys got. Once he corrected the fumble issues, he was real dangerous, a dangerous two-way player as far as running and catching out of the backfield. He was fast, man.
Yeah.
But he didn't stick around for that shit.
Like a loaf of bread. He held it like a loaf of bread.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a loaf of bread. That was too cool. First, and then all of a sudden kids were doing it.
Let me get one, because we're almost out of time. Let me get one last question to LV and even to you, Chris. What would be the legacy of Tom Coughlin, written as if it would be his last year?
He's won two gigantic, wonderful Super Bowls. He was the coach of two, and during the social media age, to a certain point, the technical age. So it worked. That works. And these are two unlikely teams that he won with. I would say the 07 team was a little bit better. But he did it by getting these guys to pull together at the right time to realize a dream, man. And he did it within four seasons rather, of each other.
No.
So that's very, very commendable, man. And so that puts him right in Hall of Fame talk. Easily.
Yeah, definitely.
I have nothing but love for Tom. Listen, let me tell you, let me just say this. We're almost out of time. We got 3 minutes. Listen, don't get me wrong. I love Tom Coughlin. He did a lot. I don't even need to go through all the accomplishments the man's done. The problem is that his time has passed in terms of communication, filtering down, handling teams from the perspective of young players want to hear younger voices. There's got to be another voice in the hallway here with this franchise. And this franchise is like the second richest franchise in NFL, probably fifth of all sports, you know, up there with Manchester United and the Cowgirls and the Yankees and all that. So it really matters right now that a change be done. That's all I'm saying.
What about you?
So, Chris, you're saying you want a change?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah?
It's time for another voice in the hallway, bro. A younger one.
Yeah, but who? To me, there's no one out there. If Coughlin says he's going to retire, it is what it is. But as far as
letting him go, firing him. I can't see that. I can see this guy going until he's ready.
No, he's not going to be fired. They're going to kindly not ask him to step down. That's what they're probably going to do. Kindly.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to do.
I'm all about Coughlin, man. Like I said earlier, I've liked him since he was with the Jaguars. He has that toughness, that old school, and I like that. I don't want to say maybe he's lost his touch the way this season's been going. You know, maybe people aren't listening to him. I don't want to go there. But, you know, I do know for sure he definitely got a little soft over the years, thanks to Strahan.
Which worked out.
But to me, he's the definition of an underdog. That's the way I feel how he approaches it. Like, you're never out until you're out. Like the 07 Super Bowl. We just made it, then we were on the road and we took everybody out. That was just the fight. Real quick.
Tell everybody real quick how we can find your content. We can find you on social media and anything you got going on real quick with the Sons of G-Man. About to wrap up.
To all the listeners, check us out on Instagram at Sons of G-Man. Like I said earlier, we're honored for all the love we've been getting. SonsofGmen.com, check out our website. You can get some of our gear on there. We have we post about our events all the time. We got one coming up in the city on the 27th with a few former Super Bowl champs. Shout out to 383 Sports. They're also sponsored. They're actually running that event that we've been welcome to. Check them out on Instagram, 383 Sports. We tailgate. And when we tailgate, we post everything on Instagram so everybody knows what's going on.
Cool, man. Man, Chris, it's been a fun discussion with the guys at Sons of G-Man. Got to wrap up before we get cut off. But, hey, man, check out the audio archives, Bleed Blue Show. Here's Sons of G-Man. Listen, download the episodes, iTunes, Podcast Republic. Tune in for your smartphone and tablets and all your electronic devices. Bleed Blue Show, we're out. We're out of time. It's been fun, man.
All right.
Time flies.
Thanks so much, LB.
Yo, thanks a lot, guys. Steve, Chris, hope to see you guys soon, man.
No doubt, man.
We'll do this
again. Can you dig it?
Hello.
Back on the air. Let's go to the phones. Caller, let me help you.
Hi. So I've been trying to get my landlord to fix my washing machine for weeks, but he keeps avoiding me. What do I do?
Excellent question. Well, have you been to AT&T?
Why? Is my landlord there?
No, but when you have AT&T Wireless and DirecTV, you can get unlimited data.
Sounds great. But how about fix my washer?
Well, it won't. But now that AT&T and DirecTV have joined forces, you can enjoy your favorite DirecTV shows on your phone while you're counting quarters at the local laundromat.
Sweet.
Sweet indeed. AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Come into AT&T now and get the Priv by BlackBerry.
Must have eligible TV service. If you're not eligible, AT&T will move you to a new plan and overage charges may apply. After 22 gigabytes of data usage, AT&T may reduce speeds. TV content varies by device, location, and package. Monthly and other charges, usage, and other restrictions apply. See store for plan details.
When you don't go to geico.com, car insurance can be hard. Like early 90s heavy metal hard.
I'm yelling and screaming and I'm loud.
Geico makes it easy. You can review and update your policy or report a claim on Geico.com or the Geico mobile app. Because shouldn't we all have a little less stress in our lives?
I'm not